podcast for nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 119, and it's a slightly different one for you guys. Ash and I are at PAX Prime up in Seattle right now, playing a bunch of stuff, seeing a bunch of things, a bunch of panels. And we're going to do a few recaps, kind of one per day. Today was Friday. We just finished the first day of the con. And we're going to talk about what we played and who we talked to.
Yeah, and Hillary's actually here, too, at the con. She's just doing a lot of stuff with BioWare. And Matt and I are in our hotel room now.
Yeah.
And it would be strange if Hillary was here with us. Because we don't have pants on!
No one will know. I'm not going to yay or nay that one.
It's a pant-free zone. But, yeah, we play lots of stuff. It's been kind of crazy.
I think first off, just right off the bat, we need to say Thursday night was the nerd-appropriate hootenanny, if you will.
I don't know how it got that name.
And I don't either, but
Stuck.
A bunch of people came out, and it was absolutely a blast, and we are so thankful for you guys coming. We hope you had fun, anybody that got to make it. We hope you enjoyed yourself. It's really important to us that you do. That's really all we really care about is saying hi to everyone and that you have fun. So.
Absolutely. You know, we invited a bunch of past guests to come out and a lot of listeners and friends, and a lot of people showed up, and it was just incredibly cool to see everyone in the same place at the same time. And there was one point where I looked out and I was like, wait, we've had that person on the show, had that person on the show, and that person on the show, and they're talking to each other. It was like a weird, like, nerdy comic book crossover, and I was like, these are all past guests. This is the coolest thing ever. So it was really humbling and a lot of fun, and I can't wait to do the next one already. So
yeah, so that was, we just wanted to get that out of the way. Thank you so much, guys. Seriously, it meant a lot to us, and we had a great time, so we hope you did too.
Yeah.
But let's get to the stuff we did on Friday. Friday was a long day.
It was.
It felt like we got there. It's Friday. They do a thing at PAX called Media Hour, which is they open the floor up an hour before the actual things start, or the actual exposition starts.
Yeah.
So we came in and we went straight to Microsoft.
Because Titanfall was there, and we really, really wanted to play it. We knew that it had just been playable in Germany, really, I think, for one of the first times ever. And when we heard it was going to be here, that was kind of first on our list, and we knew that the line was going to be nuts later. So we played some Titanfall, and holy shit.
Dude, it is so much fun.
It is a lot of fun. I think the level design is incredible because there's like a street war going on where the Titans are kind of battling it out, and then the pilots are able to, you know, use parkour and these jetpacks to kind of navigate the level and get on top of buildings, and you can get really tactical. The gameplay itself is just absolutely phenomenal. I can't wait to actually dig in and start unlocking things and playing
it. So great. Yeah, so we basically had three playable classes with three playable Titans, and you could mix match the Titan with the class. They weren't bound to each other, but we didn't get to see the customization at all yet. But good Lord, the play was so much fun. And the Street War itself, there's actually NPCs down on the ground that are just, they're like military running around and shooting at you, but they're not actual other characters. Like, it was, I didn't even, the first time I killed one of them, I was like, oh, you're not even another player. Like, there's just NPCs running around, too.
I love it, yeah. They were calling those popcorn enemies, and it makes the battlefield feel a lot more real because there's stuff going on all the time.
All the time.
It was
incredible. A really fun game, really visceral, and really gratifying when certain things would go off. Like, we, you know, kill a Titan. When you take a Titan down, it feels amazing.
Yeah.
Like, it's awesome.
Absolutely. And always good to see their CM, Abby Happy, old pal of ours, and she was there exhausted from her.
She's got a schedule, guys.
Crazy. She's going to be bringing this game all over the world, essentially, in the next couple months. So good luck to her.
Yeah.
Then after that, what did we do? Oh, we stumbled and found a couple Killer Instinct sticks there.
It was so great.
Yeah, it was good. It was like time travel, going back to the old arcade and playing some Killer Instinct. So we played, I don't know, one or two rounds of that just in passing, but it felt just like Killer Instinct.
It was wonderful. Like, I was laughing the whole time, and, you know, Ash started finding a combo. Like,
I found one combo
that he could repeat, and then and then I started figuring out some of the special moves and started, like, bouncing back on him. But, I mean, it's classic Killer Instinct, and I had a blast.
Yeah, it feels great. It feels just like the old Killer Instinct. It looks really pretty. I don't think screens and stuff really do it justice because it's so well animated.
Yeah.
When you see it in person, you're like, oh, okay, I get why this is next gen. So,
and I know they announced, we didn't see it, it wasn't there, we didn't talk to anybody, but they announced the pricing, and I know that it has a pretty sane pricing scheme, so I think you can just buy the whole game for like 20 or 30 bucks, and it was awesome. It was tons of fun.
Very cool. I played the demo that Scott played at East of Transistor, which is, of course, is, you know, the indie darling from Supergiant Games, and I watched Scott play it, and this time I got to play it. And it's awesome. It's a lot of fun. It's sort of like this weird hybrid, I guess, tactical, turn-based, real-time. I can't even really explain it, but the music is incredible. There's this strange, like, voiceover narration. It almost has, like, this strange jazz kind of vibe to it. This gentleman, like, talking to you in the background. Just incredible music. But Transistor was incredible, so...
Yeah,
you know, I definitely check that out when it comes out.
And I had a brief conversation with their art director, Gen Z, and hopefully we're going to have her on the show soon.
Cool.
She was awesome. But
God, that art is so beautiful.
The art on that game is just amazing, and I've been kind of like, not stalking her, but weirdly like trying to find her and hoping she was at the con so I could get a minute, just be like, we really want to have you on, so hopefully she'll come on soon.
Awesome, that'd be great. We met with the team from Kerbal.
Yeah, Kerbal Space Program, which is kind of a... growing indie community around a game, if you will, where you build these kind of like in-depth physics run rockets that you launch into space with these small little creatures called Kerbals on them that you're trying to have survive. And they showed us a bunch of new features coming in the game. And actually what we're going to do right now is cut to a little bit of the audio. The interview is really long. We're not going to put the whole thing up, but we're going to give you a few minutes with, we had two developers and their PR guy, so here they are talking about Kerbal Space Program.
So, tell us a little bit about your team, how big your team is, how long you've been working on the game, kind of where you want to take the game in the future as well.
Well, we've been working on it for almost 3 years now. We started early 2011. First release was on June 2011. So we've been doing this iterative development scheme where we release updates regularly. So the game's been steadily growing, and sort of a work method. It's just instead of going for one big release and that's it, we're doing these small incremental releases, and if you bought the game already, you get all future updates.
So that probably helps with Steam, too, right, as far as doing the releases versus other platforms, maybe?
Well, definitely. Steam has this awesome release pipeline, which for us is it's brilliant because we can just click one button and deploy an update for everyone.
That's great.
So when you guys were first conceptualizing the title, what made you want to build... from what I've seen of the game, there's nothing really out, anything like it that exists. So what drew you to actually trying to create something like that?
Well, KSP has actually been a pet project of mine for over 10 years now.
Wow.
It started out when I was a teenager. Me and my friends, we would play this very reckless, don't try it at home game. Where we take like
darts in the sky,
actual firecrackers. <and rock. laughs>
We played that one too, the lawn darts.
Bad idea. Well, actually, like firecrackers and rockets and like that we had laying around, and we'd strap like fins and struts to them, and we'd make these little men out of duct tape, out of tinfoil, and duct tape them to their cockpits and stuff, and build like little spacecraft. And those guys we called Kerbals.
Oh, cool. So this is something from your childhood that's kind of...
Yeah, we were actually playing real-life Kerbal Space Program, and thankfully no one lost any limbs in the process.
So when I first started playing KSP, it was one of the most earliest public versions that was available, but even back then, they had built into the game really fun, like, robust modding tools, and there was not a lot of, I guess, barrier to entry. Like, you could get in there and really start making something fun. So I got a hold of it, and I was like, well, what can I do to push this as far as possible? And I started adding airplanes to the game by just absolutely hacking the
game. You launched the airplanes from the launch pad, like, vertically, because there was no runway.
It couldn't land or anything.
Not to cut you off, but how did you get the skill to be able to do this? Did you go to school for programming?
No, actually, I'm pretty much self-taught. I've always had a passion for it, so I would go and I would do my J job, and at the end of the day, instead of watching TV or something, I would sit down and I'd spend a couple hours every day working on my own projects. And I was, like, I was going to be like that indie game developer in a garage or something, yeah. And make my own game. And then I thought like, well, I'll make a mod for this game. I'll learn a lot of skills, a lot of the art, a lot of the stuff that I want to do anyway, mm-hmm. and learn Unity, which is the game engine that it runs on. And it ended up that it transitioned into a game development job. I would never have expected it to happen. And it's added a whole aspect to the game. Like the space planes now are a pretty integral part of the game, and people really enjoy it.
Tell our listeners where they can get it currently and possibly what's going to be coming out in the near future.
Okay, so KSP is available on Steam and also on our own website, cripplespaceprogram.com. Either way works, you can buy the KSP store version on our own site, or you can buy the Steam version.
Excellent. And where can people find you social media wise? You guys have Twitter and all that stuff.
We're on at Kerbal Space P. Okay. I think it's facebook.com/Kerbal Space Program.
Okay.
And our Reddit community is really awesome. You know, yeah. I mean, obviously that's an independent community, but definitely want to give them a thumbs up. They're awesome.
And next. So we got to go check out Assassin's Creed 4, the single player. I got to play the single player campaign, and I was actually there with Ash,
their director.
Yeah, right? Their director, Ash, who was an incredibly funny guy. Yeah. And he kind of just handed me the controller and said, hey, like, do whatever you want. You can go harpoon whales, or you can go explore that island.
Well, first he's like, pull the map back. And we're like not even playing the full version of the game. We pull the map back and there's like all of Cuba, half of Mexico, and then like this huge ocean span with a ton of things in it.
It was insane, yeah. I mean, the game is incredibly large, open sandbox, and it played very, very well. I got to get in a couple ship fights with the Jackdaw. So I got to board an enemy ship. Unfortunately, in the end, I was I died. So I had a horrible demo. I did okay, but my crew died in the end. But
You weren't wearing the headphones, and he did make the point. He said a lot of things are happening in the game that are kind of contextual. So you boarded a ship, and you were running into to fight, and then apparently your crew was starting to lose. He said what will happen is, like, if you're starting to lose, your crew will jump in and kind of, like, knock a guy out for you so that you don't necessarily die right away. But if you're not listening, your crew will be calling out for help. And he said that's probably what was going on. Your crew was yelling for help. You weren't running to their aid because you were low on life and trying to kill the captain of this ship. And then the whole thing just went belly up, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. But it was a blast. I got to assassinate some guys. I got to swim in the water. There is going to be so much replayability and just so much to do in Assassin's Creed 4. And I love the ship stuff in 3, so I'm really excited about actually getting my hands on this one.
And Ash did talk about that, taking the ship stuff from 3, expanding it, and just kind of making this big, you know, pirate-driven universe but it still feels like Assassin's Creed, I will say that while there looked like there was a lot of stuff to do, it didn't look like there's going to be a ton of weird things to manage like they've been kind of doing in some of the games, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see, but the gameplay looked phenomenal. The art was amazing. And then after that, we got to sit down with actor Ralph Ineson from Game of Thrones and Harry Potter, a bunch of other things. He's the voice of Charles Vane. Right?
Yeah, I guess right, Charles Vane.
In this game, he has one of the most amazing voices I've ever heard in my life.
It's like when I DM and I do like a tavern keeper, I don't know. Like, that is his actual voice all the time. And just listening to him, like, holy shit, I just like want this guy to be like, you know, my voicemail message or something. So he has an incredible voice and a really cool guy. And he talks a lot about the experience of motion capture and...
he didn't just do the voice. He did all of the mocap for the character as well.
Yeah,
so.
So very neat. So check this one out.
A couple minutes with this guy. Again, it was a longer form interview, but we're going to give you a piece of it right now so you can hear Ralph Ineson talking about Assassin's Creed 4.
So, tell us your name and who you're
going to be
playing in the game.
My name is Ralph Ineson, and I'm playing Charles Vane.
Tell us about the experience of voicing the character, like, compared to film and television. Was it strange being in the booth and stuff?
Were you solo in the booth, or did you read with?
It's not just the voice, it's full motion capture.
Did you do mocap, too?
They put the balls on you?
The face camera, the ball for everything, which is what made it so much more interesting. It's fully playing the character, physically, facially, and everything. I do a lot of voice work anyway, and it's a completely different ride.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I kind of assumed, would be very technical for the whole mocap thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually much more freeing than you imagine. In the studio, there's 50 mocap cameras all around the studio. So you do the scene, and if you get it right, if that's good, you have the whole scene. You don't have to redo anything.
So they capture audio too and everything?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, that's really neat.
So what you don't have to do is, if you're shooting a movie, obviously you might have 7 different setups for a scene, and within each setup you might have 3 or 4 takes, and each one of those you've got to match for performance, match for continuity,
right,
kind of thing.
Yeah.
But whereas mocap, it's a bit more theatrical in a sense, and more, a bit more like doing theatre, because it's kind of live.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, do the scene, you can really let go and do it,
mm-hmm.
and that's it. You know, you don't have to compromise by thinking, oh, I've got to hit that mark and focus,
right,
or I've got to make sure that on that syllable I go like this.
Yeah.
None of that. You kind of let loose to do it. So it was a much more exciting job as an actor than I expected it to be. I thought it would be all technique. It's not.
I've always wondered, do you have props and stuff when you mocap too, or are you just faking everything?
No, you have some really strange props. They're just like sticks with a ball. And they're very surreal. So, you know, loads of gaffer tape on.
You must start, like, after doing that for a couple weeks, you must start to have strange dreams of being in this surreal world with, like, ping pong balls attached to you. What is going on?
I kind of thought it would be so much weirder than it was. Mark Bonner, who plays Blackbeard, put it really well. He said it's like when you're a kid and you're playing war.
So what can you tell us about your character without spoiling anything, because we want to find out for ourselves? But what was the character like?
He's crazy man. He's a really, really bad bastard. He's one of the most extreme characters I've played, in a sense, because he doesn't care. Full stop. Care about it. Does not give a fuck about anybody, about anything. He has no loyalty. He has no honour. He's a hedonist. Drinking, fucking, doing whatever he wants. But what he also wants to do is kill and cause pain and intimidate people.
Okay.
That's his fun.
Okay.
In a sense.
So he is literally just a bad guy.
I mean, he's not a bad guy in the game. He's one of the bad guys, but he is. Like, he's just very instinctive. He's one of these people that just attack all the time.
Yeah.
He just wants to intimidate and bully and hurt people.
Yeah.
He gets whatever pleasure he has in his life from that. He's really on the front.
So how was that to play, that level of aggression? Like, was he, you got a lot out over there, and you went home.
Did you go home, you just relax, like, oh, feel good.
It was like primal screen therapy. He screams a lot. He's always going, so you do that for 10 hours in a mocap studio.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
You enjoy the rest of the show.
I'm sure.
Yeah, please.
So after that, we actually had a break. I think we wandered a little bit, got some food and stuff. But like I said, guys, this is literally 11 a.m. that we're talking, or 1 p.m. We have not even made it past half mark in the day.
It's been a busy morning.
So we after that went to Clay Entertainment, which is a favorite of ours. We loved Don't Starve. We played it in PAX East, and you know, became like game of the con for us, and we passed it along to everybody, and we even gave out a couple codes recently for Don't Starve. It's a wonderful, wonderful game, and they announced they have a new game called Incognita.
Yeah.
We walked over there not really knowing, I think, what we were walking up to, and it ended up being a tactical turn-based strategy game.
Yeah. Definitely inspired by XCOM. We learned, of course, the emphasis isn't on combat. It's more on stealth and accomplishing very, very specific objectives, like hacking computers and things like that. And it is... It's a little bit reminiscent of XCOM also, because there's permadeath with the characters that you pick up and rescue, so you can build this team of spies and level them up and give them new abilities and things like that, and then eventually, of course, they will die in combat, and you'll lose them, and it'll be sad. So
we played. I got to play a pre-alpha of the game. Definitely some kinks to work out as far as just interactions. There's a lot to do in the game, and it's kind of... It's tricky. We talked to him a little bit about that. It's tricky to find that balance of how do you control, you know, a bunch of different characters and still know what you're doing. But we did sit down with the developer and I think game lead on this one.
I think it was game lead, yeah.
And we're going to let you listen to a few minutes of him talking about Incognita, but new game from Clay. It looks totally awesome, and I think it's hitting pre-alpha on Steam on September 10th. So,
cool.
Check that out.
We're going.
Okay, so why don't you go ahead and tell us your name and the title we're, of course, talking about and your position on the team.
All right, sure. Hi, my name's Jason Dreger. This is Incognita. I'm one of the designers on the team.
Awesome. Now, we're huge fans of Don't Starve. We picked it up last time here, actually.
East.
Yeah. So we played it at East, and obviously that game made us even bigger fans of your company. So is there a crossover between the teams?
A little bit. I didn't work on Don't Starve, but like in the programmers and the artists and stuff, yes, there's definitely a crossover.
Awesome, that's cool. Yeah. How big is the overall studio at this point?
It's about 30, 35 people.
So you guys are growing steadily, picking up steam. That's cool.
Yep.
So this is the pre-alpha of Incognita.
Yes.
So how long you guys have been developing it, and how long do you think it's going to take you to get out a version that people can actually dig into?
So there was a long pre-production where we were trying like some very different things, like almost like a card game, stuff like that. So it's been in pre-production for quite a while. But I guess it's been in this, like, you know, like the isometric version playable for, I don't know, five or six months, you know, getting to where it is now. Yeah.
So we know when Firaxis was working on XCOM, they did a similar, they built a tabletop version of it first and tested it kind of for months and months and months until they felt the system was perfect. So you guys kind of went with the same route. Do you think like this type of game lends itself to a formula like that?
I think any game that you can do like in like more paper pre-production and things like that, that's good. We made like flash prototypes and things like that.
Did you?
So what was some of your inspiration? Did you grow up playing games like this, turn-based stuff?
Yes. I mean, XCOM, the original XCOM.
The original XCOM. I'm going to give you a high five for that.
Yeah, it's my number one.
Spent an entire summer in my sweatpants playing XCOM and like rebooting it over and over again near the end because it got so incredibly hard.
I pick it up every couple of years and play it again.
Still insanely challenging and awesome. Yeah. So the original XCOM is an inspiration for this.
For me, yes.
Yeah, and you can kind of see it. And that's that's an incredible game. So this isn't what I got, but it's awesome. I see that it seems as though there's a lot of non-lethal sort of attacks in this game. So what kind of made you go that route? It seems like it is more about espionage than killing.
Yeah, so tactics games we find are mostly about like information gathering and then positioning. And generally like Final Fantasy Tactics, XCOM, these games, it's like 20% information gathering and then 80% positioning and finishing off your opponents.
Yeah.
In fact, the objective of most of the maps is to like wipe the enemy off the map.
Right.
For this is that it will be 80% information gathering and then 20% positioning. And one of the ways to do that is that we change the mission objective from, instead of wipe out the enemy, it's get off the level.
Yeah.
Collect stuff and get off the level. So you could ignore the guards entirely. And in fact, that would be very good because you would be wasting resources on doing that. So we want to try and build as many systems that you have to do that, to like search out the level, see where the guards are without engaging them, and decide if you want to engage them and how you want to. Like, do you want to distract them and use up some resources to do that, or use up resources to fight them in this area?
Where can people get this, and like what time frame are you shooting for getting it out and everything?
So we're gonna start the alpha in a few weeks, and then beta will be in a few months after that, and then probably early mid next year is when the game will actually launch. It'll launch on Steam. It's on OS X, Steam, Linux, and maybe going to the PS4.
And Chrome, too, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So we will be probably following the same model. They'll probably be on the similar platforms.
Yeah.
And
very cool.
For more information on that kind of stuff as it comes out, forums, Clay forums, forums.playentertainment.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
No problem. Excellent.
The last game, at least, that we saw was the kickstarted game Banner Saga from the developer Stoic. They had sent us an email saying that they weren't going to be able to make it, and I was like, oh, that's too bad. We'd love to meet you guys. We're hoping to get them on the show later, too.
Because Banner Saga looks incredible.
But
it's like so insane looking.
Yeah, we got an email from their lead mocap performer for females on the game named Shaylee. She's like, I'll still be there. Please swing by. Come see the game. And I was like, oh, yeah, we'll come by. And we happened to walk past it yesterday, so we stopped. Poor girl's by herself at the con.
By herself. What that means is you cannot poop. You cannot go to the bathroom. There's no one to get you food or drink. So you are, like, stranded in, like, a prison of sound.
Luckily, she's at Indie Mega Booth, and I think they're all kind of helping each other out a little bit. And they've got their own kind of enforcers that come around and bring water to her and stuff. But, she showed us the game and talked to us about it for a minute. It is fucking gorgeous. Yeah. I mean, the game is all hand-drawn art based off of it's rotoscoped off the mocap that they get from the performers, and
it looks like 1980s, 1970s Ralph Bakshi art, like Fire and Ice. It's absolutely gorgeous. The gameplay, turn-based strategy, is awesome. It reminded me of playing D&D.
Yes, it's super in-depth. Yeah. Like a difficult game of chess is the way she kept putting it.
Yeah.
Very, very, very tactical, very, very strategic about how you're going to approach things and do different stuff based off of Viking lore, right? Mm-hmm. So you're a Viking tribe essentially fighting against this evil force that's pushing in on you.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. So definitely check out Banner Saga if you guys have not.
I think we will have a couple of codes that we're going to probably give away for the multiplayer or for the single player to try it out. And I know that there's a free version of the multiplayer on Steam right now.
We're giving something away.
We're going to find something, yeah, from Banners. Because it just is an incredible game. We all kickstarted it, so I definitely want to keep that in the support loop. But, yeah, so that was Friday.
That was Friday. And we're taking the light this year, guys.
Yeah, this was us not overbooking.
Oh, and we recorded, like, all of the BioWare panels, too, so we'll have a bunch of them from Friday.
Yeah.
And the audio actually worked, so go us.
Yeah, that'll be coming out next weekend. When you hear this, you'll hear it on this, hopefully, on Tuesday, and this will become, we'll put those out the weekend following. That'll kind of be our podcast 120, even though we don't number those, I don't think.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is Friday, so we're going to try and do these little wrap-ups every day, and then we're going to send everything to Scott so he can get it out to you on time, and PAX, I'm exhausted already, and there's three more days.
We need to put our pants on and get going.
I guess so.
Later, guys.
See ya. So it is Saturday at PAX, day two. We had a pretty big day today for different reasons. We didn't play 15 games like we did yesterday, but
yeah.
Today Ash and I actually split up for most of the day.
It was sad.
It was sad. We weren't together holding hands like we usually do.
Skipping.
But first appointment for my day, we got set up at BioWare, got all that stuff going. So we will be bringing you all their panels again this year. That'll be out next week-ish. But first thing I did was go check out a game called Dying Light coming out of Warner Brothers. It is a new IP, and it involves free running and zombies.
Nice. So there's a little parkour running from the zombies?
Yeah, it feels very Mirror's Edge. It's first person, so like you see your hands kind of moving when you're running, and other than that, there's no real, you know, it's not over the shoulder or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the zombies, there's actually two modes to it. There's like a day mode and a night mode. And you, out during the day, you're not unstoppable. If they get grouped up on you, you can get your ass taken down pretty quickly. Mm. But if you manage to kind of avoid them or run around them or hit the ones that are coming up to you, and they showed me a bunch of really awesome moves. Like you can actually catapult off the top of them. So you can run right up to them. If you time it right, you'll like jump on their shoulders and jump like higher up above a building. And it'll knock them down. You can slide and kick and, you know, all the parkour kind of moves that you'd think would be there. I had some weapons that were all melee weapons and pretty lightweight. There was one big, like, I saw a sledgehammer and an axe.
Nice.
That were pretty cool. They could do some heavy damage. But what's crazy is when it flips over to night,
Everything just kind of goes nuts. It's super stressful. All the zombies become like hunters, and they start moving really fast, and they can climb. Because during the day, they can't climb, so they just kind of amble around. Mm-hmm. At night, they start climbing and chasing after you. But you have this kind of series of traps that you can set up, and you have these decoy beacons you can throw out. You have these little things that you can try to get them away from you while you're running. And basically, at night, if you manage to be stuck out at night, which it seems like the narrative will put you out at night, you basically just haul ass back to base. It was like the only goal.
That sounds really cool.
But at the same time,
yes,
the exact same moment that this I was playing Dying Light, you, Ash, were sitting in the VIP area, if I will,
yeah,
of the BioWare Dragon Age panel.
Yes. So first of all, I have to give Hillary a shout out because I don't know if she thought this was as cool as I thought, but she led all the cosplayers and everyone from BioWare across the street and down the block a little bit to the large hall where the Dragon Age Inquisition panel was being held. So it was like kind of watching like Hillary's crowning moment, like leading this charge of like, you know, 50 plus people all throughout Seattle and just kind of charging. And I thought it was really kind of neat just to see her kind of, I don't know, just pay off. Cause she's been working very hard for BioWare. So it's nice to kind of, she's having a good day today. So it was nice to see. But anyway, the Dragon Age Inquisition panel was awesome. It was, the thing that's interesting about it is it wasn't broadcast anywhere. So it won't be in our podcast stream. It won't be, it wasn't live streamed or anything like that. It was really just for the people in the room. And they said it was more or less like, the largest closed door session they've ever really done. So they just kind of wanted to show off what they've been working on to the people at PAX, and it was kind of a gift to the fans in a sense. And we got to see some amazing stuff. They showed off a lot of gameplay, which you know, everything just looks incredible using the new Frostbite engine. So we got to see the new weather effects, a lot of the new foliage, the ground just looks incredible, and everything's insanely detailed. They actually said they were going to include Kunari, both male and female, as playable races, which is a big first for the series. And they showed off some still images of the mounts, so you're going to be able to ride horses and stuff, and probably other types of mounts at some point. They revealed so much today. It was pretty awesome. They showed tactical combat has returned, so you can actually zoom out and maneuver your units like you could in Dragon Age Origins. And that's for all platforms. So that's pretty neat that you can do that now. They showed off this really cool thing called Keep Control, where you can actually try and take over different areas of the map through taking over these keeps. So you can actually whittle down these keeps, and some of them can be really challenging to take over. And you'll do things like poison wells or like slowly knock down walls. And eventually, as you and your team start to take down these keeps, you can take them over and use them as bases of operations. So, you know, the level of depth looks pretty incredible. They showed a couple seconds of what dragons would look like and showed off, they basically said that dragons were going to be enemies that would take a very long time to take down, as dragons should, and that dragons are like large targets that you really should work toward killing. But it is looking phenomenal, and I cannot wait to see, you know, what other big reveals are coming. But, you know, so Inquisition, keep your eyes out for it.
Awesome. Then we grabbed some lunch, hung out for a little bit. Yeah. It was a little bit more of a down day. We didn't have too many appointments. We started just kind of wandering. We were wandering the Indie Mega Booth. A friend of ours, Sean Baptiste.
Yes.
From Firehose.
Yep.
Games, who was also hosting the 4Play panel that we're going to talk about tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Comes up to us and starts. I saw him, kind of waved him down, and we started talking. And he's like, "Oh, you got to check out this game called Jazz Punk. It's on the sixth floor," which I didn't even know there was a sixth floor. Mm-hmm. And we head up to the sixth floor to check it out, and there's a whole raft of other games there.
Yeah, that's where the PAX 10 are, and a lot of like smaller studios are there, like Adult Swim Games, they were there.
So you checked out a game first,
mm-hmm.
which was...
I can't remember the name of it right now.
Then we'll skip over it.
Yeah.
It seemed fun. It was like sticker looking.
It was fun.
But right next to it was Jazz Punk, and so I sat down to play it.
Yeah.
And I turned to the guy who made the game, and I said, oh, is it available to play? He's like, yeah, sure. And I put the headphones on, expecting him to be like, okay, well, now what you need to do is... And he just walked away.
Yeah.
And I just was like, okay, I guess I'll just play. And I started walking around. And, I mean, there is no way I'm going to explain what this game was by talking about it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what Baptiste told us is, like, there's a game on the sixth floor. You get an objective. You get dropped in a town. You have to figure out how to do it. He's like, and that's all I'm going to tell you. And I'm like, first of all, like, sixth floor? And then I'm like, no instructions. I'm like, this is really intriguing. So it became kind of like a scavenger hunt. And then watching play, I was laughing hysterically because it's a lesson in idiocy.
So first of all, to enter, you don't get dropped anywhere. What happens is you walk into your boss's subway car office,
mm-hmm.
and he tells you these ridiculous things. Like, he just says nonsense, but then he's like, oh, you have a mission. I need you to go to the Russian consulate and steal this secret data that they have. And you're like, okay. And then he gives you a bunch of pills, like drugs. Like,
yeah.
And he's like, take one. And then you take one, and then you're in the Russian consulate. and if you read, you can turn the bottle and read the label, and it's like, don't take too many, only take enough to hallucinate right into where you need to be or something. The whole thing is like an acid trip. It is so weird. And then you get to the consulate, and there's voices. Some people have a voice, and some people like mumble a little bit, and all the characters are these like weird kind of like peg people blocks,
yeah, like weevils or weevil wobbles.
And the gameplay is just, there's no instructions in the game, like zero. Like, it'll be like, go to Russian consulate and get this thing. And you're like, okay. And you show up there and everybody's like, you can't come in. And you're like, well, what the hell is going on? And so you walk around and like, you can like read a newspaper, which will tell you nothing, but there's all these crazy like 50s noises that will happen. I don't know if you could hear the audio.
No, good.
So there's like the whole thing is like 50s spy sounding, like all the sounds that happen,
uh-huh.
and all the music like pops in with like this crazy like like Batman, like 60s Batman or something. And then I walked over to a clock. And then when you look at the clock, there's a sign next to the clock, and then there's, like, the clock. And the sign says, like, had a bunch of times and things that they would do at those times. And at 12, it said lunch. And I was like, well, I wonder if I make it lunch if these people will walk out. So I go to do lunch, and, like, I look at the clock, and, like, a hand. It's the weirdest thing. Like,
oh, yeah, a finger. You can manipulate your hands on the clock.
So then you turn the hands on the clock, and it hits 12, and the guys go to lunch. Well, I look down on the floor, and there's like a paper hand on a stick that was the hand that I used to push. Like the weirdest, just like the craziest, weirdest things that happen in the game. And then I go up, and I entered this like weird matrix area because I hit a button on the computer. The whole thing is so weird.
So it was so weird watching you play it that I the guys, first of all, the guys that made the game were standing about 15 feet back.
Yeah, like
from you,
way away.
Watching you play. So I kind of walked up to them, and they're both dressed completely in black, by the way.
Yeah.
And I'm like, did you guys make this? And they're like, yes, we did. They're like really soft spoken, just like slowly nodding. And I'm like, this game is really cool. And they're like, thank you. And I'm just like, can we come back and talk to you? And they're like, yes. So we have an interview with them tomorrow, and we'll put this on, you know, put this on here. And
yeah, I mean, I'm rambling at this point.
Yeah,
the game was just so nuts, and it was so much fun. I was laughing throughout the entire thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's totally surreal. So yeah, I love stuff like that. So
we're going to talk to them tomorrow, and then, after that, we kind of head back to the base and picked up our stuff, and now we're back pantsless in our hotel room again.
Talk to some of the BioWare people who are some of the sweetest people ever.
That's with our pants on.
With our pants on.
Yeah.
Yes. But, yeah.
But, yeah, we had some nice conversations there. The base is wonderful again this year, but I actually want to try and get Hillary in the room maybe on Monday or something to recap BioWare base for the whole weekend.
Absolutely. We should do that.
So, that's it for Saturday, guys. There's two whole more fucking days.
Yeah. We can do this. Hurts so good.
Oh, God. But thanks for listening again. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Later, guys.
See ya.
This is Ralph Einstein, and you're listening to the Rated NA podcast at nerdappropriate.com.
So that was the intro. Today's Sunday. That was Ash. God, there's so many noises going on right now. That was Ash cracking his knuckles and checking Twitter.
Yes. Some things never change.
We had a pretty good day today. We've been sleeping at this con, so it feels... Not sleeping at the con. That sounded wrong. We've been actually getting sleep during the night times of this con inside of our hotel room. So... We're chipper. I feel like we're getting more done and a little more clear-headed. Although if you hear some of the full format interviews, you'll hear sentences just entirely fall apart from my mouth. I'm like, do you like game thing and the pillow bed? And then it just doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, you go into an interview blind with no questions prepared. Sometimes you may hit a little speed bump or
which
two.
Which we've pretty much done on every interview this weekend.
So far, so good.
And speaking of interviews, yesterday I drooled all over Jazz Punk in our recap, this game that we played from Adult Swim. And this morning we grabbed a few minutes with the developers and talked to them about the game and, its lunacy and how funny it is. And they had some really great answers about comedy, I would say, and about video games.
They were fun guys. Team of two. Working on a really...
For a very long time.
Ambitious and bizarre game, but very exciting stuff. So
we'll cut to that and give you a few minutes from the guys from Jazz Punk. Here you go.
So I'm Luis Hernandez. I'm the artist, sound designer, musician, and co-writer at Necrophone Games. Our game is Jazz Punk. And this is...
I'm Jess Gross, programmer, animator on Jazz Punk.
Awesome.
So, here's a hard question. Conceptually, what the hell is going on?
I've left last night. And I was like, Sean Baptiste showed us this awesome game. I'm like, it blew my mind the whole time I was playing. And then they're like, what was it? I was like, I'm like a peg person, kind of, walking around, doing things. My favorite point in the entire thing was when I killed the flies.
Yeah.
And then I turned around and it just says, you did a thing. And I was like, well, fantastic.
Yeah.
But if you were to have to describe the game to someone listening on the other side of the world, how would you actually describe this game?
Okay, so... Jazz Punk is a first-person comedy adventure game set in a sort of Cold War era 1960s spy fiction cyberpunk universe. So it's like mid-century, you know, it's a lot of kind of James Bond type gadgets and stuff.
Yeah.
But sort of in addition to kind of doing espionage missions and stuff as like the backbone of the game, there's all these kind of extra Easter eggs and like side gags and interactions and weird people you can talk to. And
yeah, that's really the meat of the game is in those sort of side interactions. Mm-hmm. The sort of adventure game component, the plot in that is just there to facilitate those interactions and hopefully get some laughs with people.
And you were saying yesterday that the game didn't start off being based around comedy, that you guys were just kind of putting stuff in as you were going and it got to be very funny.
Yeah.
And you started to change almost the whole theme of the game based on, you know, making each other laugh. So I think that was pretty incredible. How did that come about? I mean, you just were just throwing stuff in there to...
That was a really scary decision. I think when we like actually decided, that's what we were like, oh, we're going to make it a comedy game.
Yeah, it was either a really good idea or a really bad idea.
Yeah, like, oh, we're going to bankrupt ourselves forever. So we're really silly guys. I've always been I make stupid voices and stuff. Jess is always doing like silly things too. So we were making kind of a straightforward, not straightforward, it was still stylized, but we were making just sort of an adventure, you know, stealth espionage type game,
sure.
Right? And after a while we were working on it, we would kind of sneak in like little just a joke here or there, just kind of for our own amusement.
Yeah.
And over time, we worked on the game. We realized like those were our favorite bits, were the bits where we would have just a little, oh, you know, they say some dumb thing.
Or yeah.
Some, and so we were like, what if it's all candy like that? You know, what if the whole game is indulgences like that? And so we started. It was about a year, two years ago when we started.
How far in are you at this point?
Yeah, that's when we decided it would be a comedy. And since then, the game is just, we realized that's what it was.
Yeah.
Like, it was trying to tell us, I think, the whole time. And we were just like, nah, no, we're not going to listen to you.
We're making a serious game.
Yeah, yeah. Stop trying to, no, serious. No one will take it seriously if we're silly. And then when the game transformed into a comedy, we're like, oh my God, this is, not only is this really fun for us to make,
yeah,
I've never seen anything like this.
Yeah.
And it's exciting to work on. And like, we can invent stuff I've never seen in a game.
There's so many little things too that like, so the very beginning, the one thing I, sentences, I've been doing this all week and I don't know. So one thing that I noticed first off is that I came up and I was like, oh, can I try out the game? And you're like, yeah, sure. And then I put on the headphones and I was going to turn around and be like, so, and then you were like 10 feet away. And I was like, okay.
You're on your own. Yeah. That's how I like to play video games with this sort of is little background information
right.
about what it is. So there's more surprises and such. And the other thing is we get a lot of test data from afar. So
sure.
we can, like, watch our subjects in their natural environment. And
kind of see how they interact with
yeah,
stuff.
It's
and
like,
yeah. it's like the walls they might hit
yeah,
or something.
Exactly.
Yeah, we have our, like, David Attenborough voices. And they're like, he approaches the interactive object.
Yeah.
And he tries to poke it with his, you know, mandibles.
So one of the early moments that I had, I think it was there was probably two moments at the very beginning that I was like, oh, okay, I know, like, I'm already in it now, I love it. The moment that I've talked about this moment
yeah.
to everyone I've told, is when I time-shifted the clock
right.
to noon with a hand,
right.
and then I looked down, and there was a paper hand on a stick
yeah.
on the ground,
yeah.
and I was like, what? I just started
yeah.
laughing immediately.
Yeah, we wanted like, to sort of allude to Polly Blank, which is the name of your character, as being this sort of amorphous
yes.
being, like what is Polly Blank? Is it just like a container of dowels with various hands?
Yeah. Because like, you don't really exist in most first-person games. Like, one of the fun things about this is we can kind of poke at sort of the existence of a first-person
yeah.
game in general, where
yeah.
you look down and you don't have any feet
yeah.
or anything,
yeah.
and it's like, you're just kind of this weird camera floating around in the world. So, yeah, that was just a weird thing. We're like, what if your hand is like,
yeah.
it's just a hand on a dowel.
I mean, is it really just you two pushing each other further with these jokes? Like, just
yeah.
figuring out these little moments that you're like, that would be amazing. Because you don't even have to look at that hand. I just
no.
happened
yeah.
to look down and was like, oh my God, like, what is happening right now?
I think a lot of it is we'll have like a writing meeting. And then we'll kind of start off serious, and we'll be like, oh, serious writing time for the game. And then it'll kind of start getting late, and like we'll get more reclined
yeah,
on the couch.
Loopy, yeah.
And then I'll just say something stupid, or I'll just be like, we'll just try and make each other laugh almost outside of the game.
Yeah.
We'll be like, oh, yeah, what if this, like, I'll just, you know, something
yeah.
really dumb.
Yeah.
And then if it gets a laugh out of Jess, or if Jess says something and it gets a laugh out of me, it's like, that's
start
it.
Workshop
yeah,
and like, get it in.
You
yeah.
kind of have to get the serious writing out of the way.
Yeah.
And sort of, you're scraping the bottom of the barrel of your,
but that's
your content.
The,
and
yeah.
That's
where all the flavor
yeah,
is.
Condensed flavor. Yeah.
That's amazing. So the moment, like the fly shop that I talked about, I didn't even have to do that, did I? Like, that was that a side thing that I did, or... Because
oh.
I think I went back and did it.
No, that was just a side thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the fly shop.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I hit the girl with the fly swatter.
That's my friend, Lily.
And she's like, I'm not that kind of girl. And then I was like... So I hit her again. And she's like, now I'm starting to like
yeah,
this.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. Like, every time... It just made me want to interact with more things
right.
in the world. Like, the guy with the Q-tips and the ears.
Oh, man.
And you pull his brain out on the... Like... I'm glad you're laughing, because I just, like, the whole time I'm like, what is happening?
But in a good way. I mean,
in a great way. It's amazing.
There's more games that make you laugh. think that's something we're really.
But it's not the, you know, and now I'm just like climbing up your asses essentially. It's not
slowly.
The easy. Yeah, slowly.
Hello. There's a level for that.
Let me make a home in here. It's not even the easy joke, which is I think what I loved about it, because I'm a gigantic comedy nerd. I've been since I was a kid, you know, and like I spot easy jokes in games all the time, and I'm kind of I call it like gamer humor, and I'm just like,
yeah,
it's like the dumbest. And this is all, everything that happens is like these special little moments that like could or could not even happen. And that
right.
It was amazing. I'm very happy you guys did this. It was awesome.
In terms of your team and how large your team is, so where are you guys based out of?
We're based in Toronto. Toronto,
awesome.
Canada.
Awesome. Just the two.
Is it just the two?
Just the two.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Wow.
It's all 100%.
It's all 100%.
And you're saying you're
pure.
2 years in since you made the change to doing comedy?
Yeah.
So how many years in are you total?
So we've been working on and off.
4.5 years.
Yeah, about 4.5 years.
Wow.
But we made a small mobile game in between. We've also changed engines 3 times.
Really?
So Unity wasn't where it's at now. So when we started, Unity was a small, you know,
Mac only.
Yeah, Mac only, like just sort of a test thing, and we're like, oh, I don't know, who cares?
Yeah.
And then it sort of blew up. So that's what it's running on now.
It's running on Unity.
But 5 years ago, there wasn't even really the tech available to do a game like this.
Yeah.
And we can iterate on it so quickly now.
Like, our workflow involves a lot of prototyping. Half the content that we've prototyped is not in the game. So
really?
Because, you know, comedy and games is kind of an experimental thing, what works and what doesn't, regarding timing and all this sort of stuff. So our tactic is to just spend gobs of time developing everything and then call the
unfunny
stuff.
Yeah, the unfunny shape that just goes out.
That's amazing.
But it's like, is it funny to slap a monkey in first person? I don't know.
It's like one way to find out.
It's not like, oh, I'll send him a monkey and he'll be like, okay, and then like, that's the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Ship it. Like, put it in. I don't know if, I don't want to reveal whether that's in there or not. Maybe.
How long is the game? I mean, how long are you planning for the game to be? Are you going to add content like as we go, or is it kind of a
right now
ship and release kind of thing?
We're
kind of
aiming for about movie length. So it'll be at least an hour and,
a half, 2 hours,
yeah,
something.
An hour, at least an hour and a half, probably for most people, two and a half even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of the content is optional, so it depends on
their play style.
Yeah, if you do that kind of exploring. You could easily spend 3 hours on it.
Yeah, if you want to do every little thing.
Right.
And some people, I mean, I'm like an artist, so a lot of my time is spent walking around games, like looking at stuff.
Yeah.
Right? I'm just like, oh man, look at that building. It's so well done or something.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine playing this game not being who I am, but like I would just stare at things probably.
Yeah.
So yeah, it depends on the type of person. Some people just run through it like Quake.
Right.
It's like, well, not quite Quake.
I mean,
but
you miss a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did you guys get hooked up with Adult Swim? Was it a Smiddle kind of thing, or
we made a teaser trailer about a year ago, and that got posted to indiegames.com and a couple other sites like that. They just approached us.
Oh, awesome.
So we've been talking with them for quite a while, and not until last week did we actually officially go public with that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So yeah, they're publishing us onto Steam.
Cool.
You know, no green light.
No date yet or anything as far as...
We don't have an exact date, but it's January.
January.
2014.
Awesome.
Oh, that's soon.
Yeah. It'll be really quick. September, like, because Christmas season will just sort of fast forward for everybody, and they'll be like, oh my god, here it is.
Yeah.
So where can people find you social media-wise? You guys have, like, a Twitter or anything?
So my Twitter is at BeetleKnot, like sort of like an astronaut that's a beetle.
Sure. Logically.
Our website is jazzbunk.net or necrophonegames.com.
Okay.
And that's probably the easiest way to find us.
Awesome.
Well, thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You.
And we're stoked on the game, so can't wait to see it. Yeah.
For action.
We left the jazz punk booth and we headed down to the indie mega booth. And you went and played a game.
Yes, I went and played Legend of Dungeon from Robot Loves Kitty, which is a indie game that we've known about for quite some time, and we tweeted some stuff about them because they have a pretty cool story. It's a husband and wife team. Of course, we interviewed them today, and it was awesome. They have one of my favorite things, of course, is to ask indie devs their story, and we heard, of course, that you know they've been married for about 10 years, and they've been working on games together, I think he said, for like 5 or 6 or something like that. But they've kind of poured their heart and soul into this game, Legend Dungeon, which is a roguelike, which is very, very difficult. It's so difficult, you'll hear in the interview that that Robot Loves Kitty actually has not beaten the game themselves.
Yeah.
They've never gotten to the bottom of the dungeon and gotten out of the dungeon. But
well, and part of it is that it's a dynamically generated game, so the dungeon's never actually the same every time you reboot the system.
Yeah.
So the dungeon is the same once you start a game. It'll be the same dungeon all the way through it, no matter if you backtrack or go forward, it's the same.
Mm-hmm.
But then the moment you reboot the game, completely new music pattern, completely new dungeon.
Yeah.
New enemies.
Very cool. And it's 4-player co-op, roguelike, so you can, you know, work together as a team and share items and drop stuff and pick up loot as you go. And there's all sorts of crazy weapons. You know, there's all swords, and we got a laser kitten, literally a kitten that shot laser beams that you could kill monsters with. It was really fun. I really enjoyed it. I can see sitting down with everyone and just plowing away on it for hours, like in front of, you know, the TV, which would
very be fun. Awesome. They kept talking about it kind of as a couch game. They want everybody sitting together and playing, and that's kind of their goal, the whole thing.
Yeah, I could see, you know, if a lot of games similar to Legend of Dungeon did come out on the Ouya,
mm-hmm.
I would buy an Ouya.
Sure. Yeah.
But no, they're not right now.
No.
So, unfortunately, you know, right now this is going to be PC only, and have a nice listen to our chat with the team from Legend of Dungeon. I love Kitty!
So, tell us a little, first of all, tell us your name and tell us, obviously, your game and how long you've been in development.
Okay, so my name is Calvin. My wife is Alex. We are Robot Loves Kitty. And we've been working on Legend of Dungeon since last October.
Wow, that's incredible. So, it's a pretty unique game because it appears to be relatively simple, but then in reality, there's a whole lot going on. There's tons of different items. Every single level's randomly generated. I heard you speaking to another player, and you said you yourself have never actually beaten the game.
That is the case.
So it is incredibly challenging. Tell us about maybe what your inspiration was for making a game like this.
So my wife plays a lot of, she does still play a lot of Rogue, like classic original ASCII Rogue.
Yeah.
She played it on her first computer that she ever had, and she still plays it today. I spent my youth in the arcade playing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and X-Men.
Of course, yes.
So, and I lost a lot of quarters that way.
X-Men,
well, I utilized a lot of quarters that way.
Yeah,
and so this is kind of a homage to our youth, which we did not spend together, and now we kind of have a game that both of us love.
Wow, awesome.
And both can play together. So that's the idea.
Who is your favorite character in the X-Men arcade game?
Nightcrawler, thank you.
Mine too.
Absolutely.
I did this, and I knew exactly what you meant, because he had the ability to like that. He was my favorite as well. So, you have elements, it's obviously a roguelike game, it has permadeath. What are some of the items and things people can look forward to that are specific to this game?
So, we've got everything from, you know, your standard fantasy stuff, you got swords, you got shields, and then we start to get weird. There's things like Tommy guns and bazookas. There are books. Oh, there's also books that you can summon the skeleton army to fight for you. There's a laser cat.
I saw the laser cat. I actually got to wield the laser cat for quite some time.
Excellent.
I got my ass kicked in your game. I was really kind of embarrassed. I was a ghost for quite some time.
That's okay. That's
our intent.
Yeah, I did manage to come back for a little while.
Cool.
Figured I'd try and fight again. Died in about 2 minutes.
What is the team res mechanic? Because I was just watching it. I'd see you like res every once in a while, and I was like, what happened there?
Because it's a roguelike, you're going to die a lot.
Yeah.
But if you're playing co-op, you want to still have fun. You don't want to go, with Steve won again. He's going to, you know, sit there for hours. So what we did is we made the characters turn into ghosts. And
as a ghost, you can kind of run defense. You can push other monsters around. You can move items. But we also wanted to give you a chance to come back, so you can collect souls of fallen enemies, and that will allow you to resurrect with a very low amount of health. So it's a second chance, but it's still pretty close to Armored Up.
Yeah,
very cool. Now, I think it's awesome that you work with your wife. I want to hear the story of... I don't want to hear the story of how you met this little person, but how did you guys decide to create your own studio, and what is it like now being in a place and showing off something that you worked on together? I mean, that's gotta be a pretty cool experience.
Well, first off, let me say that this is like the best vacation in the world. I get to stand around and talk to people about my video game, which we're both incredibly passionate about, and see them have a blast playing it. I mean, this is heaven. This is great.
I mean, I do have to say, we get a lot of emails from developers and stuff, but the way that your wife puts the emails together, you can see the passion coming through in those emails, and I was instantly turned on to your team, because I was like, okay, like, they are really in this, and they really love it, so that it came through just in text, which is cool. Yeah. So you guys have been, how long have you guys been together?
We've been together for over 10 years now.
Okay, awesome. And how long have you guys been working as a developer?
I can't recall exactly, it's a blurry kind of thing.
Yeah.
I tried to do this on my own while I had a job. I quit my IT job to screw around on the computer for 5 years.
Wow.
Not finishing anything.
Yeah.
But we knew that this is what we wanted to do. So Alex supported us while I messed around on the computer.
That's awesome.
And then we decided we still wanted to make games. She's always wanted to help with the games. So it was like, you know, let's go all out.
Yeah.
We sold our house.
Wow.
We moved to the woods and built a treehouse on some friend's property.
Wow.
And we made more games.
That's really
until we got
awesome.
A hit, which
it's
is
really, really awesome. And now you're here and people seem to be really loving it. So,
yes.
So you guys are currently on Steam. It's sort of in a near-finished beta state, right?
Absolutely.
From what I understand. So you're in a near-finished beta state. When are you going to be official, like, live, good to go?
13.
The 13th
of September.
September.
Yeah.
So it's coming out.
That's
so
what we've told people. Yes.
Everything? Like,
no, I mean, it's stable. What we've got going on, I'm mostly just being like, don't break anything. That's my
yeah.
goal.
Yeah.
Add some more stuff, don't break anything. But we're feature complete, and it runs all day on here with no crashes.
Yeah. What's your... in terms of future support for the game, are you going to add additional weapons and monsters and content? Because I know every level is randomly generated. So, I mean, it's not like everyone will... There's no way you can ever get bored of it, because it's going to be different every time already.
It's pretty great.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, you're into roguelike stuff. It's like, it's awesome.
So we ran a Kickstarter when we realized that this was something that people want. And two of our stretch goals got met. One was player classes, and the other was pets. So we are going to be releasing those in three expansions that'll just come out for everybody for the game. You're going to be able to find characters in the dungeon and lead them back to the tavern, and that will unlock them as playable characters.
That is so cool. I love that idea. That's really cool. So thinking of the future, the far future, what do you guys want to do after this?
So, right now, I just spent the last 3 weeks working on a game for VR Jam.
Okay.
I have an Oculus Rift dev kit.
Yeah.
And it's called Zappin' Dino Cowboys.
Okay.
I may be the first person to ride a virtual dinosaur, which is pretty much the coolest thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
But it's going to be, we're going to see how the response to that comes out. I'm going to try to make a non-Oculus version and see if people like it. If they really want to ride virtual dinosaurs as cowboys in space, then that's what we're going to do next.
You got an elevator pitch, though, you know?
Yeah.
You want to ride a dinosaur? Come here.
So if that goes through and people want that, we're probably going to work on that game. We should be talking about Legend of Adventure stuff. Zappin' Dino Cowboys is so awesome because you have a beam lasso, and you can beam lasso the dinosaurs, and then you're riding on the dinosaur. You're like really riding on a dinosaur. Sometimes it growls.
Yeah.
You're on a dinosaur. I don't know what else I can tell you.
Yeah, that's incredible. That's incredible. So, how was your experience with Kickstarter? You said you met your stretch goals and everything, so do you feel like it's a viable way to get money for developers? Yeah.
it's not only a great way to fund a project, but the majority of the coolest stuff that you see in Legend of Dungeon was by backer request. So they backed at like a higher tier level and got their item in the game. And that's where like the Americorn shield comes from, which is a half shield, half unicorn American flag.
Americorn shield.
Or I think, let's see, like the owlicopter, which is half owl, half fan helicopter thing that attacks you. I mean, weird. If you see something weird in the game,
somebody paid for that. That's awesome.
The fish hat is a fish you wear on your head. Kickstarter backer.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. That's great. That's
we also got backed by the then CEO of PopCap Games.
Really?
So we have Plants vs. Zombie references right in the game.
Oh, cool.
That's awesome.
I did see the cones on the head, and I was like, wait a second.
Yeah, no, those are legit.
That's really cool. Where can people find you social media-wise in terms of your Facebook, Twitter, etc.?
If you go to robotloveskitty.com, we have links to all those, but I'm at robotloveskitty on Twitter, and my wife is at kittylovesrobot. So.
Perfect.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Awesome.
It was great to talk to you guys.
Yeah, you too.
Yeah, we did that and then headed out of the Indie Mega booth and into a bus.
Ah, yes. So, I don't know, about a week and a half maybe before the con, we got this really cryptic email that said, hey, you know, we're showing off something cool. You know, we can't tell you really anything about it yet, but it's going to be on a bus. And do you want an appointment? And we're like, well, we've never been to an appointment on a bus before. So I said, sure. And Matt was a little skeptical. He was like, I don't know if I'm on some bus. Who knows what they're going to do to us on the bus?
I like an escape route, guys. Yeah. I like to know that if something goes wrong, I can get out of the area that I'm in. And I felt like being on a bus meant that we were going to be out in Seattle somewhere. And they could. I don't know where I'm going to be. I can't escape.
True. It's true. We didn't know if the bus was going to drive around or throw us out someplace or whatever. But so we took the appointment anyway without knowing what it was. And it turned out it was a very wise decision because it is from brand new indie publisher. Yeah. So they're working with a lot of different indie studios to bring games to the masses. And they're called Midnight City. And Midnight City is good. Right now they have 10 games kind of under their wing, and they're going to be adding more soon. We got to play 4 of them.
And it was, I will say them all, Video Ball.
Yeah, Video Ball.
Blood of the Werewolf. Well, we'll talk about this in a little bit. Blood of the Werewolf. Blood of the Werewolf, Organic Panic, and the last game was The Bridge.
The Bridge, very good. First one we saw was The Bridge, which... I wrote that on my notes that it was M.C. Escher-like, and that was kind of the inspiration for it.
Definitely.
A little bit Braid-inspired, which is something that the gentleman who made it said. If he likes the time reversal technique that was used in Braid. He wanted that so that people wouldn't get frustrated with dying, which happens frequently in this game. But The Bridge was a puzzle platformer, so to speak, that uses physics and...
It uses a weird sense of gravity. You can literally rotate the stage 360 degrees.
Yes. So imagine Mario where you can actually rotate the level itself and everything reacts according to actual gravity. So, for instance, if you did it in Mario, like all the Koopas would slide off the screen, right?
Yeah.
So this game is trying to solve puzzles using that mechanic and... Of course, you have to make sure that your character survives while you're rotating the level around and manipulating things in the environment. It was... like mind-blowingly, like it was beautiful. It was really amazing to look at. It did look like an M.C. Escher painting, kind of in motion. Not a game for me.
Nope.
I really was happy they did not hand me the control. It is Scott would love it. He would eat it up and play like every single map.
Yeah.
I think
he
my wife
named
would
how
love
many
it.
Maps, and it was a lot.
It was. I think it was like over 48.
48.
Yeah. Somewhere around.
Was he the one? Was 48? Maps with 6 stages on each one or something?
I think it was So I don't know.
Something crazy. It was a lot of playthrough.
A lot of maps. Yeah.
He showed it though. The mechanics seemed to work really well. It was pretty gorgeous. They were playing it on the Xbox, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he was trying to get on as many platforms as he could, and said many times that Midnight City was the only reason he's going to be on more than one platform.
Yeah.
Which was pretty.
That's really
neat.
Cool. And that was also a team of two people.
Yeah. Just an artist, a remote artist, and then him. Mm-hmm. He worked, you know, one place, the artist was somewhere else entirely.
It's pretty remarkable.
So the second game was a game called Organic Panic.
Yeah.
And you are a set of fruit.
Yeah.
Maybe some vegetables, I don't remember, but I think you're all fruit.
I think it's fruit.
And each fruit has a special ability, whether, like, the cherry can dig through dirt and then fire out the dirt, like, out of a gun, kind of, at other vegetables that are trying to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was one where we saw was a kiwi that could turn into water or fire water if it was in water. It could, like, shoot the water off into other areas. And then there was a coconut who could levitate things.
Mm-hmm.
This is basically like a physics playground. The way they pitched it was Earthworms meets Little Big Planet.
Mm-hmm.
And their biggest kind of thing that I could tell they really wanted to get out was that they have this in-depth level editor, and that every level, they're making over 100-something levels, and every level you can play in the game was made in the editor. They built the editor so they could make this stuff, and you yourself will be able to build anything you see in the game
mm-hmm.
with this level editor. A pretty simple mechanic. You're going around collecting these kind of like glowing balls to get more magic, and then you use that magic to do your special power as whatever fruit.
The powers looks incredible, though. So, I mean, I guess to kind of tell the listener what the game looks like, it looks similar to Worms.
Yeah.
But imagine Worms where physics existed. So in Worms, you could blow up pieces of the stage, and it would just do, like, little cutouts, and, you know,
right.
bridges wouldn't fall, et cetera, et cetera. Well, in this game, if you knock a hole in the wall and there's water behind it, the water will flow out into the rest of the stage, and you have to learn to avoid that or jump over it or
mm-hmm.
or whatever you can do. And there's also enemies that you fight against. So it's a strange, I've never seen anything like it, but it was really neat to watch just how everything moves so fluidly.
And everything's destructible. So if you, let's say you have like a bridge and you're going underneath the bridge. If you take out the legs of the bridge will fall on top of you. Like everything moves based on real physics and is completely destructible inside of the stage. So it's
really
pretty cool.
They
were talking about, one of the devs said something about having spent 5 years on the mechanics of the water alone just to get the water to work perfectly. And I mean, that's kind of an insane amount of time, but it looks amazing. Everything moved very fluidly and very amazing. So
yeah, it was good stuff. I liked the game a lot.
So the next game we got was from some jocular gentleman, if you will. and the game was called Video Ball.
Yeah.
And it looked like, if you ever played, what was it? Was it called War on the Atari, where you're the two tanks moving around the stage shooting at each other?
I'll remember the name of it in a second.
Combat.
Combat, there we go.
So if you took Combat and you made the graphics a little less blocky and a little faster,
mm-hmm.
and the mechanic, instead of shooting another tank, was to shoot a ball into the goal of the other player, then that's Video Ball.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, it's a very fast paced, you're 2-on-2. And you're shooting bullets at this ball to knock the ball into your opponent's goal. Then there's other little mechanics you can do to block the ball, to kind of stop it from moving. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can die if you get shot or run over by the ball. You actually played.
I did. It was really fun. My team won. I played with a gentleman from Screw Attack against someone from Joystick and another person, I think, from Screw Attack.
Yes.
So it was kind of neat. It was like this weird, like, games journalism grudge match. You know, it's really, really fast, and they had a really neat charge mechanic to the actual, I guess, combat system or game system. What happens is the map generates these balls or pucks, and you have to push them using your cannon into the enemy goal zone. But the harder you, or the longer you charge your shot, the more, I guess, force it has, and the harder it pushes the puck.
Mm-hmm.
If you hold it down for too long, you create like a barrier. So you can do a number of different strategies, and also your movement can make your shot hit harder as well.
Yeah.
So you can like run, like, you know, as fast as you can, and then fire a big blast, and then technically you can knock it, you know, all the way across the map into the enemy goal. It was really fun. Really fun and really strategic and really fast-paced. So, you know, if this is a budget title, it's an awesome title to play with a group of people sitting on a couch. Like, honestly, I could just see, like, you know, popcorn, drinks, just everyone goofing around having a good time. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And then the last game we got to see was from a more established studio. They were the biggest team that we talked to about that was involved with Midnight City. And they made this game called Blood of the Werewolf. And it is an old school 2D platformer. Well, not 2D completely. There's 3D elements in it, but it's a straight on side scrolling platformer.
Mm-hmm.
Where you play as a mother who is a werewolf whose husband was killed and child was kidnapped. And you are kind of going, traversing these levels to get your kid back. And the enemies are all old school movie monsters. So Mummy, Frankenstein, Dracula, the creature from Black Lagoon. And very tactical, very fast paced, it looks like, for the most part. If you play either as the mother when you're inside and not outdoors in the moonlight, and you've got like a crossbow and some other special things you can earn over time, and these monsters are coming at you, and it's very kind of Mega Man at that point, I would say. And then if you switch outside, you auto switch into a werewolf the moment the moon strikes you, and at that point it's more maybe Final Fight-ish, if you would, I guess. I'm not sure. Not Final Fight. It's a bad example. You're not. It's not really ranged like combat anymore. You're going up and swiping and dashing at people.
Durable. You can double jump. It makes. I guess it allows for the puzzles the puzzles for each map to be a little bit different. So rather than it makes the jump puzzles less challenging when you're the werewolf, and I think it makes you hit a lot harder. So it just changes the game up a lot. When you actually get out into the moonlight. So.
He's talking about how the enemies are not dynamically generated. They're static where they are.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of Metroid-ish in that sense, like you're learning patterns, or Mega Man, you're learning patterns. You're trying to figure out how to beat levels, but the puzzles are static. They're always going to be that puzzle every time you hit it. Which was cool. And it looked ridiculously difficult. We didn't play. He took us to a part where you're, you know, there's these smash rods that are kind of like smashing together, trying to kill you while you're falling down an area. And even he, the guy who made the game, didn't make it through.
Yeah, he died.
The thing. I mean, it looks insanely challenging. So if you're into that kind of Mega Man thing, this game
really
is probably
hardcore
for you.
Old school platformers.
For some reason, it made me think of Altered Beast on Sega. I have no idea why. Maybe just because of the werewolf. But
yeah.
But
I miss Altered Beast. That game needs to make a comeback.
I know, like in a nice, fast paced. Maybe this is it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it was very cool. And then that was the fourth game we got to check out. We left, got to go outside and talk to Casey Lynch, who former, I think, editor-in-chief of IGN, and now has struck out on his own and is doing this Midnight City game publishing company.
I really, really liked what he had to say here, and we'll kind of let him speak for himself, but he formed this for all the right reasons to kind of give indie developers a bit of a voice and a little bit of backup, because it's not an easy thing to really promote your own game when you don't really know much about marketing or PR or anything of that nature. So, you know, I think our chat with him is pretty good, and I think you guys will like it.
Yeah, so we'll try to get as much of that in this episode as we can. So here is Casey Lynch talking to you about Midnight City.
It is kind of a big deal, and we love what we saw, and I think I'm getting the vibe you're going for, and like it seems like there's a lot of heart in this whole project that you're going for. So if you wouldn't mind talking to us.
No, I'd love to. That would
awesome.
Be great.
Sure. Yeah. So you obviously come from a background in game journalism, and you did that for a long time, and what made you kind of make this jump into supporting independent developers and kind of trying, it seems like you're trying to like unify them as a... and give them a lot of support. So what made you want to do that?
Well, I mean, so, like, most of my experience is on the editorial side, but I've done business development and marketing and PR. Like, I worked with Harmonix on Rock Band and the Three Realms on Duke and Prey. So I've seen kind of both sides of it, but being on the media side, like, I would see so many games, and we would review games, and we would show off games, and they just wouldn't get traction.
They never, yeah.
Like, and then we would be stuck in this thing of, like, you know, at IGN, for instance, where we would, you know, want to offer discoverability and show off these games, but they don't do the same amount of traffic as Call of Duty or Titanfall or something like that. I mean, they're totally different types of games, right?
Right.
So, you know, at IGN, we're always feeling the weight of, like, we want to turn people on to important games, but we also need to, you know, stay in business. So it just got me thinking, like, what is it about indie games that needs to change? And it's not the games. Like, the games are awesome.
Right.
But you start asking questions like, what would have happened if, like, Journey would have been played by more people? Like,
yeah.
What if Journey was on Steam?
Yeah.
What if Journey was on Xbox?
Yeah.
You know, you start asking questions like, what would it take for indie games to actually sort of be on that same mass acceptance and visibility and understanding level as Halo or Madden or something like that? Maybe we'll never get there, but
right.
I guess in answer to your question, I thought, well, I think from the organizational and the service perspective, that's something that could change. So we kind of picked up this idea of, like, what if we pull together a collective of indie developers, almost like a record label more than a publishing.
That's an old SST.
Yeah.
And when I saw out, your, like, shirt, I was like, wait, it all just clicked for me.
Yeah, and we figure out, like, okay, what do you need as a developer? Yeah. Because, like, for instance, the Werewolf game that you saw, like, they have a studio of 15 people with, like, you know, staff and benefits and all that.
Yeah.
Ty, the bridge, you know, he made that with him and his buddy Mario.
It's ridiculous.
Like, so they don't have product managers. They don't have people that liaise with, you know, first party.
PR
they
and marketing,
don't,
yeah.
They don't, they're not just going to pick up the phone and talk to their external third party, you know, outsourced test agency. Like, they don't have a PR marketing firm.
Right.
Like, it wasn't even so less that they had a Twitter account, you know? And, like, so they're... So there's just all these things that we feel like we can bring to the table. And that's why we felt like it was important for us to partner with somebody and not just do it on our own.
Yeah.
Because with Majesco, we've got all the resources. We have all the relationships with First Party.
Yeah.
We've got, you know, great studios that we've worked with in the past on ports. You know, we can offer that as a service to...
I was going to say, so what is Majesco bringing to the... Are you guys literally like a subsidiary of them, or is it kind of like you're split a little bit?
No, it's fine. We're like Miramax to their Disney.
Okay.
That's the right analog.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, like we have access to their war chest. We have access to their relationships.
Awesome.
We have access to the studios that they've used to port games to their testing.
Well, kind of like you know, back to the music, like Matador would have with, I think they're Sony or somebody now. Like,
yeah,
that kind
absolutely.
Of. Yeah. A little bit of the budget, a little bit of the PR and marketing departments.
So how many different indie developers are you guys looking to bring on eventually? Are you going to keep it kind of small and intimate, or are you going to grow it to be massive?
I mean, if we did, we would want to scale it the same way that we're doing it now, which would mean that, like, what we're doing with Midnight City right now is we have 10 developers, and we have a team of, like, 4 internal people that are taking care of those, of the needs of those 10 developers, and, you know, in every aspect. So if we were to scale... We would just want to replicate that and have, like, teams of, you know, of tens and tens and tens. But we would need people to take care of that.
So you're almost incubating, too. I mean, you're kind of bringing these guys in and giving them this surrounding of support.
Oh, I mean,
I know you've been saying that, but there's so many weird tangents I'm drawing from it as far as, like...
Yeah, like, and we're going to do stuff, like, we want to do... we have this idea of doing a pre-treat, which is not a retreat. It's, like... A pre-treat.
Yeah.
it's what happens before the treat.
Sure.
But where we, like, go away for, like, 2 weeks, and we bring all of our developers, you know, who all just met each other for the first time at this event.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
we met face-to-face because they're all
over, crazy.
You know. So it was awesome. We had dinner. We're like, hey, this is our company.
Yeah, yeah.
But we want to do this thing where we all go away and just do, like, a game jam for 2 weeks. So, like, for 1 week, we would have them all make a game by themselves.
Yeah.
And then the next week, we'd have them all work together on one game.
Yeah.
And then present them to everybody.
Yeah.
And just see, like, hey, what do we come up with?
That's awesome. A brain trust of sorts.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's all sorts of different things that we can do. But for right now, we're just here to help them take the specific games that we signed to market. And we're, you know, we're in conversations with them about their next projects. And we have other games, too, other than these 10.
Yeah, yeah.
And other developers that we've actually signed and that we're in the process of signing. Some of them are, you know, much bigger than these guys.
Yeah.
But we wanted to start here and because we felt like this portfolio, like these 10 games,
That too, yes.
But I think it really represents, like, a... like who we are, like it's if you look at each game next to each other, like they're all very different.
This just grabs me completely. I'm like, I get it, I love it, and I get it. Like,
I totally understood as well.
Yeah, we had like our friend Corey Schmitz did the logo and all of our branding. We had him do a whole bunch. So, like, this is just the beginning. We have all this stuff.
Yeah. Awesome.
But like he did all the art for Polygon. He did all the art for Cappy Games for their game Below for like their branding and their the trailer stuff. And he's great. But I told him, I said, I want it to look like a mix between like a slasher movie and like a record label. I want people to, like, if they saw that on a shirt, they want them to be like, is that a band?
Yeah, they want it.
Or is that like a clothing line?
Yeah. Well, awesome, man. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Awesome.
We really appreciate it.
We'll be in touch.
So the last thing we did is a game that Ash got to visit last year, or God, I keep saying that, last PAX East, which was...
It feels like last year. That is
six months ago.
Why. It feels like a really long time ago.
That game is Secret Ponchos. From the guys over at...
Switchblade Monkeys.
Yeah. They are now exclusively... Not exclusively, but they are now tied to the PlayStation platform.
Mm-hmm.
They're definitely going to come out on the PlayStation Network. PlayStation 4, because I say that because I was playing on a PlayStation 4. It's the only reason I know it.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is, I was telling Ash, harkens back to not Red Dead Redemption, but Red Dead Revolver, which was a game that came out on Xbox 360 a long time ago and had this amazing multiplayer where you was kind of like...
Actually, I think it was original Xbox.
Was it the original Xbox?
I think it was original Xbox. I think it was.
We would run around every man for themselves, four players at the same time, and you're running around just shooting at each other, you know. Split screen kind of mechanic, and this feels very. It's also partly due to the style, but it feels very much like that. There's a bunch of different character classes you can bring in, start shooting each other, and you know, it's a free-for-all. There's a free-for-all match, which is what we started in.
Mm-hmm.
You just run around and try to kill each other, essentially. Yeah. Deathmatch style.
I think there's a lot of... there's a lot to be said for the different character classes. Each one plays very, very differently.
Yes.
At East this year, I got to play through all of them. I was sitting there for almost an hour, which is probably why the guy remembered me. I was just like, I want to try all the characters, and I just sat there and played all the characters. But there's, you know, slow-moving characters with, like, Gatling guns and really fast characters that have six-shooters, and they have special abilities and special attacks, and there's a lot to be said for this game. And, you know, I really do miss playing games on the couch with my friends.
Yeah.
And it's something I said a lot this weekend. Like, I really want to do that again. I want to have people over and sit down and play something fast for an hour and order a pizza, and, like, this is that kind of game. You know?
Yes.
We're blowing up, guys!
Phones agree with
you. Damn! So popular!
And where this game took off for me was they were like, have you guys tried team play? And we were like, no, we haven't tried that yet. He goes, oh. And he, you know, was really excited, brought us over to the other set of TVs where they had team play running. And Ash and I co-opt against another team of kids. Thank God. They were like 10 years old. Thank God we won.
Yeah. It would have been humiliating.
But, it was awesome in team play. 2-on-2 was exactly what I wanted. You know, like, Ash would be, like, mowing these guys down, and I'd just run in and, like, pop, 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 like, take them out at the last second. I actually killed Ash with my dynamite at one point on accident.
That was you? Okay.
And, you know, but just really, really fun, and we were laughing and playing the whole time. Those kids looked nervous as hell, too. We were killing them.
We were killing them. Yeah.
We beat them, like, 12-5.
That was great.
But...
I had practice, though. Kind of
yeah, you did.
Bad,
a lot of practice. But, I think the only thing I wanted to add to it, because Scott and I weirdly had the same feeling on this game. We saw it at East, and we kind of walked past it. We knew you had a meeting, and we were like, I don't know. Like, it didn't really grab us for whatever reason, and I don't know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
after getting my hands on it, though, I love it. It was so much fun to sit and play, especially the co-op and even the free-for-all. Like, I was laughing the whole time, even when I screwed up and did other things. And there's a lot of little mechanics that once you start to pick up on, like, he was telling me, oh, there's a ducking mechanic. Like, go back behind a thing and duck, and you'll recharge quicker, mm-hmm. and you can heal and do all this other stuff, and they can't see you. And then I could, like, pop up and stick dynamite on a guy from behind the wall. And he was like, that, like, these little mechanics in the game that...
There's a lot to it.
That are kind
it
of really hidden, is. You know, yeah, like, yeah. that you wouldn't know until you play.
Yeah, the character I was playing as, my apologies, he has a bayonet charge, and I charged into somebody, and there was a, one of their devs was there, and she saw me do the bayonet charge, and I stuck somebody, she goes, now shoot. And when you shoot somebody, after you bayonet charge them, it does, like, double damage.
Oh, wow.
And you fire them off the front of your gun. And I'm yeah. like, I would have never thought to do that.
But yeah, a lot of little
really
things.
Really neat, fun game.
And they, the one of the reasons we wanted to talk about it was that they're getting a push. A lot of people want them to go on PC. It's obviously very expensive. And they were talking about how before Sony picked them up, they were worried about finishing it all because this game has been taking a lot of resources.
Mm-hmm.
But they are entering into Project Greenlight through Steam. And if you get greenlit for Project Greenlight, you know, you get some funding and some push for that. So there will be a vote for them. We recommend you vote for them because they're nice guys and their game is pretty awesome.
It's pretty cool.
Check out Secret Ponchos.
All right.
But I think that is all. You know, we did some stuff at BioWare, but we're trying to hold off on the BioWare talk because we're going to drag Hillary into our hotel room. And mm-hmm. it's not going to be as creepy as it sounds.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about... BioWare base and all its weekend glory with her, because she got a much different viewpoint than we've had running
Indeed.
In and out of it.
Indeed. All right, guys, we will talk to you soon. Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.
Later.
Everybody, I know this is not Hillary talking about the BioWare base, which is what we literally just said a second ago, but this is me, Matt. I'm back in Florida by myself currently. Everybody's working and such and finishing up the podcast, but we just wanted to cap it off and say thank you for listening. It's PAX Prime was absolutely awesome, and again, thank you to everybody that came out for the Hootenanny, as it was called. We had a really, really great time putting that on and really appreciate all your guys' support through the years, which is why we do it. We just like to say hi and hang out for a bit. Also, big thanks to BioWare, who let us in and out of their room to record their panels. Those will be going up very soon for you guys. We have, I think, 10 panels in total that we're putting up this time, which is pretty awesome. They did a lot of really great content about Dragon Age, about women in gaming, about the LGBT community. It's really just kind of a great set of panels that they put on every year, and we're happy to bring them to you guys. And then finally, we do have a couple other panels that were recorded. One that Ash moderated about marketing indie games, and of course the romance and gaming panel, which has our friends from Press Reset on it as well, Anna and Melissa. And Mylan graciously puts those all together, and Hillary was on all of them. So I don't know if we're going to put those up on here or if Press Reset's going to do it, but we do have them recorded, so we'll make sure to get them out for you guys. That was a bunch of non-information. But either way, thank you guys so much for listening. As always, thank you to Jimmy Henson for the theme song. I finally got to meet him in person, and he's an awesome dude. So give him support, Jimmy Henson, at Big Giant Circles. And... yeah, just thanks to everybody. It was a long, awesome weekend, and we had a blast, and we can't wait till East to come say hi to everybody again. And if you want to reach us, of course, you can email us, Matt, Ash, Scott, or Hillary with one L at nerdappropriate.com. You can find us on Twitter at nerdappropriate, Facebook /nerdappropriate, Google+1RQZTPN7, because they don't let us have our own URLs, but you can search for nerdappropriate. We'll come up on there. And we have a Goodreads group, which we still need to do the freaking talk about Ready Player One, which is a great book. So check us out. Get in touch with us. Thank you again. And we'll see you guys next time. Later.
God, there's so many noises going on right now.